we are hoping to show you just what is possible out there in our strange and wondrous world.
We travel for business. We travel for pleasure.
The story that I had to tell my American audience was very different from the stories that I had to tell to my Rwandan audience.
We travel to expand our minds.
Of course, the most dangerous animal in Africa is the hippo. More people are killed by hippos than anything else.
Whether it's one state over.
I was looking for a longer treatment, like 90 days, 6 months. And my treatment plan was to go hike the Appalachian Trail.
Or halfway around the globe.
This fantastic high desert. You watch the sky at night, so you just see the Milky Way and shooting stars.
If the world's a book, why only read one page? I'm Elizabeth Hill, and you're listening to a WAMC Northeast Public Radio production. This is Postcards from the Road.
Support for Postcards from the Road comes from CEFQ, serving banking, insurance, and investment needs with more than 30 branches across the greater capital region. Also offering assistance to local nonprofit organizations through CEFQ's Community Support Program. CEFQ, changing lives every day. CEFQ.com.
From Petra to the Dead Sea, Jordan's natural beauty is indisputable. In 2017, dedicated journalist Rosemary Armeo left her post as director of the journalism program at the University at Albany and moved to Jordan to work as an investigative journalist. Armeo now works as part of the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, or OCCRP, which is an investigative reporting platform formed by 40 nonprofit investigative centers, scores of journalists, and several major regional news organizations around the globe. OCCRP's network is spread across Europe, Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Armeo is currently embedded in OCCRP's sister organization, the Arab Reporters for Investigative Journalism, in Jordan's capital, Amman.
They work with donor money, not from government. They can't take money from the U.S. government, but they do from Norwegian development agencies and the Soros Foundation, which suddenly has become anathema to conservatives, but he's done a lot to promote freedom of the press and democracy. And with this money, they have developed a network of support for investigative reporters in the Arab world, and that means helping them to develop idea into a story that's an art, and getting legal reviews of the story so you kind of decrease your exposure for stories you're writing, helping them to get documents. Material, for example, that might not be available in Jordan could be available in the United States, which has a lot of ties with Jordan. That would be one example. And they do a lot of actual editing of stories now, which is where I've been trying to work with them, you know, to develop story plans and to actually plot who's the best person to do a story and what information you need to get and how you get it and how to be fair and accurate. So It's a combination of teaching and editing.
And what were the challenges that were brought up by a historically state-run? I know you touched base on it.
Yes. But it's really hard to do journalism in the Middle East. Jordan is surrounded by Israel, Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, all countries that are roiled in war or have been recently. And it's actually very secure. I don't feel at risk there. Now, the reason for that is state control. It's virtually a police state. So that means if you are going to write about the military in Jordan, if you're going to try to write about the government, which is a kingdom, write negative things about the king, you're going to be scrutinized. You are going to get into trouble for it, and you don't do it. So that's a challenge. We do cross-border investigations, you know, Syria and Yemen and Jordan. There might be some topic. Moving from one place to another or bringing in journalists of those nationalities into Jordan is a problem. Visas are a problem. As increasingly they are in the United States. There's no support from the public for reporting, which even now in all our throes of anti-newspapering and anti-fake news, all that whole attack, there still is a base. People still listen and know that, wow, there must be something there. You know, and that comes from, 300 years we've had in the United States since colonial times. We've had a tradition of the press exposes things and the government answers to it. We hold government accountable. They don't have that. There's no history of that there. So all of these things make investigative reporting a strange and difficult thing to do.
Are they still at risk as much as they were, say, 5 years ago to report against the military or the family as to being monitored or taken.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hear of journalists in Jordan being, you know, arrested, but you do hear of that in Egypt. What you'll hear in Jordan is, you know, there's no legal ads for the newspaper anymore. The government controls that and takes it away. Or there's pressure from the government to respond to stories, to no, this isn't right. We want this corrected. So lots of pressure that way. There's self-censorship because reporters and editors have grown to want to avoid trouble with government. So they stop themselves from reporting a lot of things. And that's kind of really efficient censorship, if you will. Why you don't even have to exert any control. It just happens automatically. The rest of the region, not so much. In Egypt, it jails reporters. There's lots of control over the press. And throughout the whole region, just as the media in the United States faces a huge economic turnover in the business. So jobs are decreasing rapidly in number. There are very few places to do reporting. I have journalists we're working with in Tunisia, for example. Very good reporter, has been trained partly in the United States, excellent skills, and was working at a TV station, and they took a hiatus for the summer. Well, that hiatus has stretched, and now there's a possibility there won't be a job at all. So where do you go from there? There's all kinds of ways to shut down reporters in the press, short of jailing or beating them.
You touched that you feel secure.
Yeah, there are no ISIS attacks in Jordan. If they are, they're in areas where we don't hear about them. It's very, very strictly controlled by the military, which again, that's why I'm saying they've given up a lot of their civil liberties as pertains to freedom of the press and speech because a service is being provided and it is secure. So you don't have like bombings in Amman, in the capital, or in Petra, where the tourists are. That's a big UNESCO site. But you don't have any kind of incidents there. I'm knocking on wood as I say that. So I've said that in many ways I feel safer in Amman than people in New York City should feel, for example.
You mentioned Petra.
Yes.
Is it very commercialized, or is it more of a wander about and see what you find?
It's both. Petra's terrific. It is a UNESCO site, and it's a former Bedouin culture that has basically carved out a city out of these limestone caves. It's miraculous, really. So there's a big visitor center now. When I first went many years ago, they didn't have that. Now there's a big visitor center and a little museum, and costs have gone up. But you still go in and just wander around. It's a huge, huge site. So you still go in and wander around. The whole time you're there, you'll be badgered by modern-day Bedouins who make their money by selling camel or donkey rides or horse rides or selling trinkets. And they just hound you to death to do that. But it's sort of the fun if you know going in what you're in for and you can find out the real prices and not pay what they ask. It's kind of amusing to watch. You can get anything there. There's all kinds of trinkets, and there are spices and jewelry and what else? There's refrigerator magnets out the wazoo, and the headscarves. I wanted to bring one for Alan Shartok. I have to get that. You know, he would look great in that, a little chic of Albany. Yeah, there's all kinds of things. But I can tell you about what you really should buy in Jordan. There's shopping, and then there's shopping, you know. In Madaba, which is about an hour maybe from, less than that if traffic is good, from Amman near the Holy Land, sites of the Holy Land. They are well known for mosaics from the Roman period. And they have a school there that teaches the ancient Roman art of mosaics. And of course, they do modern designs, and they're not doing floors for Roman villas anymore, but it's that same beautiful use of tiny pieces of stone. So you can get plaques and hot plates, and I bought a table. We spent an outrageous amount of money for a table there, but it's like a work of art.
Yeah.
So that's worth getting. And the silk scarves, you know, make sure they're made in Jordan. Jordanians are very proud of their artistic work, and it's worth investing in, but make sure it's really Jordanian and not Chinese. You don't want that, or Indian maybe. There's lots of good. So that, and then there is the Dead Sea, which we have to talk about if we're going to talk about traveling in Jordan. and there's all the products, the beauty products that come from the Dead Sea, and which is highly mineralized and oily and very good for you. So there's bath salts, which I love, and facials, you know, for moisturizing and beautifying, and that's all very luxurious. So those are worth buying too. And then there are dates, you know, that not like boys, but, the fruit. Oh my gosh, they're so good. They're so delicious in Jordan. And Syrians in great number, and refugees have come into Jordan, and so they've brought with them, they sell this amazing ice cream that is so thick, it's like mozzarella cheese when you're eating it, you know, it's so good. And they make these sesame cookies that you can get everywhere. So the sweets and the pastries in Jordan are absolutely amazing. I've gained weight.
From what I hear, the people are also very community-oriented. I mean, you can walk into a tea house and sit down with somebody and
there's
just
lots
talk
of
for
English,
hours.
First of all. Let me tell you that. And even if there isn't, if it's only Arabic, the people are very cordial. That's an Arabic tradition of hospitality. I'll tell you my favorite story. Wherever you go, people say, where are you from? Because they know you're speaking English or Arabic with a horrible accent. And you tell them and they say, welcome to Jordan. So every taxi driver, every Uber driver that you get into a car with, they'll say, where are you from? Oh, welcome to Jordan. So my friend and I, my roommate at the time, I shared a house with another American working in the country for a while. We went to Lebanon, which is famous for its wines. And we took a tour in wine country, and so we loaded up. It was amazing. We'll have to do another whole program on Lebanon.
I mean, honestly.
But we came back with suitcases filled with, you know, bubble-wrapped bottles. And Jordan has a limit. You can basically, if you stretch it, two bottles. And so we go through the machine, and my suitcase starts setting off alarms, and they pull it out, and the guy's pulling bottles out. And he goes, how many do you have? I think between us we had about 9, way over the limit. And they just took our passports, and they go to the supervisor, and we're going, oh, my God, this is going to cost us money. We're going to end up in jail. Oh, no. Alcohol is the root of all evil in Islam. And then a supervisor calls us over and says, where are you from? Americans, right? Because he had our passports. And we go, yes. He goes, welcome to Jordan. Go fast. And we just like loaded up our stuff and ran out of there really quickly. So there, you know, there, yeah, that would not have happened to a Jordanian trying to get in. But we're Americans, so we're allowed. We're not Muslims. We're not held to the same rules. It's very practical. And, you know, I've been lost. And people don't know where I'm trying to get either, but they'll help you. They'll walk with you until you get someplace where you can figure out where you are. Great patience. I really do like the people of Jordan. The people I work with are amazing. They're young journalists, so I tend to like them anyway. But they're both respectful to me and funny and include me in their events, even though I'm sometimes a burden because they have to translate for you and all that. But they do it anyway. It's amazing.
Is English common, or is it more just Arabic and you have translators?
Well, in the office, we have translators, even though English is common. They're trying to become completely bilingual. In the world of journalism right now, and global investigative reporting, you have to have English. If it's not for your viewers and readers, it's for your donors who are going to give money for those efforts. So you have to have some English. And there's a lot in the office, but we do have translators. We all take lessons. We have the hysterical lessons with each other during the day, trying to understand things. So,
are there places that, I know, Petra, Dead Sea, big places, are there smaller attractions that you
Well, they're not
think?
Even so small. Jordan ought to be a tourism mecca. But because it's in the Middle East and those neighbors that we've listed already, Americans especially don't go. Western Europeans are not going there in great numbers anymore. Lots of Chinese and Japanese are coming because it's an amazing place. So the Dead Sea is fantastic, and there are resorts there. I consider it my duty to test them all. I save money and go to them for weekends. They're really beautiful and wonderful places to visit, and so is Petra. The other one is Wadi Rum, which is, if you saw the movie The Martian, that's where it was filmed. It's this fantastic high desert, and you easily can get a ride. You pay for a ride or take a bus, and then there are Bedouin camps, and you stay overnight, and they make you hot tea, and then you sleep in tents, and you watch the sky at night. There's no air pollution at all, light pollution at all. So you just see the Milky Way and shooting stars. It's absolutely beautiful. I've been twice. I'll go again. I like going in different seasons.
Yeah.
I went when it was really, really too hot to be in the desert. You wanted to get out during the day. But at night, when the sun goes down, it's very beautiful and very livable. So that's another place. A city on the Red Sea, which is in the far south of Jordan, is Aqaba. Again, there are resorts and big hotels to stay there. And that's wondrous. That's very popular within the country. Jordanians will go there for a vacation. So it's fun just to even people watch on the beach. I love that. I have not explored the north of the country yet. That will be what I'm going to do this year. There are Roman ruins throughout the area. Now, one place that I should mention is Jerash, J-E-R-A-S-H. It's 1 hour, 45 minutes of traffic isn't terrible from Amman. And when I first heard of this, when a friend proposed to go, I go, oh, we've seen so many ruins, you know. I've been to Rome. Why do I have to see ruins here? But it's like Pompeii. It's an entire city that is mostly still intact. And there is a hippodrome, and there are these amazing theaters and beautiful temples and walkways and called the Oval Place. It looks like the Vatican with columns all along there, and most still standing. I spent an entire day there. I sent friends. I'm going again. And there are places like that further in the north of Jordan, too.
Armeo has since been back and forth from Jordan and most recently returned to the Middle East in August of this year. Postcards from the Road is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. I'm your host and producer, Elizabeth Hill. Our theme music is Cherry Blossom Wonders by Kevin MacLeod. As always, if you like what you hear, subscribe on your audio app of choice. Visit WAMCpodcasts.org for more information. If you would like to share your travel story with WAMC, email us at postcards@wamc.org.